Brady. Shit. Tell me he's okay. It wasn't that kind of diversion. I thought so, too. That's why I went to check. No. He spins to the door. Fuck no. Do not tell me. I grab his arm. Yes. I'm telling you he's gone and that there's a reason why I didn't come running to get a search party. Just listen. Please. He nods, and I explain. Chapter 23. You did the right thing. That's what Diana told me. That is, I know, what I will hear from Anders, from Nicole, from everyone else who believes in me and wants to offer support. That is not what I get from Dalton.
Fucking impossible situation.
That's what he says, and it's what I need to hear. Acknowledgement that there was no right choice here. There were only choices. He doesn't tell me he'd have done the same. That goes without saying. Because what is the alternative? That I raise the alarm and hope someone took Brady down before he could shoot Val?
Fucking impossible situation.
I put Val in that situation, so I could have done nothing that would end in her death. Even though what I have done might still kill her. I don't trust Brady to let her go. Like Diana, Dalton argues that Brady has no reason to kill her and no reason to take her with him. But he says that because, to him, this is logical. To Dalton, if Brady has no reason to kill Val, then he won't. He understands that we may be dealing with a man who kills for pleasure, but he cannot comprehend the implications because they don't exist in his world. Even with the hostiles, he presumes they attack us for a reason. When I correct him, though, he says,
"Yeah, but will he endanger his life for the enjoyment of taking hers? I like sex, but I gotta warn you, if our house catches on fire midway through, I'm leaving. Taking you with me, but leaving. If Brady kills Val, we're going to be all over his ass. Far as I'm concerned, if he gives us Val back, I'll do a rudimentary search. That's it. I'm not risking lives to recover him. But if she dies,
you'll hunt him down.
We will."
Back at the shed, Dalton tells people to carry on. Then he asks a few to help him tackle security shit, because it doesn't stop even for a fucking fire. He takes Anders, Nicole, Sam, and Kenny. Paul feels the sting of being passed over. Paul is core militia, and Nicole is not yet. But Dalton's commitment to women in the militia means showing that they won't be tokens, left off the front lines when situations get serious. Anders runs Storm over to Petra's. Our first stop is the station, where Dalton asks Nicole and Sam to wait outside. We take Kenny in. Dalton closes the door behind us.
"I'm going to ask you to step into the cell,"
Dalton says.
"Sure,"
Kenny says.
"You need me to check something?" "No, I'm gonna lock you inside until I get back."
Kenny lets out a strained laugh.
"Is it something I said? When you showed up here 3 years ago, I thought you were useless. Couldn't hold a saw. Sure as hell couldn't fire a gun. Nothing I could do with you except make sure you didn't get your damn ass killed before you could go home. Then you decided to apprentice in carpentry, and I thought, huh, maybe. Still, when you asked to join the militia, I thought, fuck no. Another desk jockey fancies himself a lawman. Gonna shoot yourself if I give you a gun. But you proved you could handle it. You became Will's right-hand man. You still drive me fucking crazy sometimes, but I came to respect you. And that respect is why I'm not throwing you in the cell. I'm asking you to walk in yourself."
"I don't under..."
"The only thing to understand right now is that I gave you an order. Either you do it, or this gets uglier than I want."
Kenny walks into the cell. Dalton closes the door. "Oliver Brady is gone," I say.
"What?"
Kenny says.
"Someone killed?"
"He escaped." Kenny's mouth works. Then he stops.
"Because I left him unguarded. Shit. I'm sorry, Eric. He was secured and the fire..."
"He got himself unsecured," I say. "With this." I hold out Kenny's knife. Kenny pats his pockets.
No. No! He must have... I know this looks bad, but...
You told me Val let you leave. She says she didn't. After you told me that, I called you back. You kept going.
I didn't hear... Wait. Val says she didn't tell me to leave?
I heard the bell, and then I smelled smoke, and I told her, and she was freaking out over the fire, and maybe she didn't understand what I was asking. You know how she gets.
Bring her here. Let me talk to her.
Brady took her.
What?
Dalton says.
He took Val hostage. You're staying in that cell, and we'll talk when we get back. Just hope we have Val with us to straighten this out.
Before we go, Dalton changes his mind about bringing Anders. That would leave Rockton exposed. The fire was a distraction, and Dalton failed to see that, so now he's madly spinning out all the possibilities we might be missing. One is that Brady expects we'll do exactly this. Gather our law enforcement and troop into the forest, leaving the town with a guard or two on fire cleanup. He could take more hostages, steal an ATV, even try to steal the plane. I explain the situation to Anders, Sam, and Nicole as we walk. Then Anders runs back to town, where he'll have the remains of the militia guard the vehicles and patrol the town while citizens handle the fire fallout. We move at a brisk walk. Val will be alone in the forest, which she has not set foot in since she was attacked here shortly after she arrived. Now she's about to be abandoned in these woods after being marched in at gunpoint. I cannot imagine what that will be like. Nicole can. She's moving faster than any of us, and Dalton has to call her back, saying,
"If Brady thinks we didn't give him an hour, that gives him an excuse."
An excuse to kill Val. We're approaching the final curve when Dalton's gait catches. A split-second hesitation as his chin lifts and his nostrils flare, finding some scent in the breeze. "Eric?" I say as I come up beside him. His nostrils flare again. His gaze fixes on the path, and when Sam whispers, "What's the plan?" Dalton doesn't seem to hear him. "You two stay here," I whisper to Sam and Nicole. I slant to look at Dalton, giving him the chance to contradict the order. He just keeps moving, his gaze fixed on that corner. "Guns out," I whisper to the other two. "Watch the forest. Do not fire." I jog to catch up with Dalton. He's rounding that final curve to the place where we should find Val. The breeze hits, bringing with it the unmistakable coppery smell of blood. I cover Dalton. He doesn't have his gun out. His arm isn't good enough for that. Instead, he reaches his right hand into his pocket for his knife. I have my gun ready as we continue around the curve. There's something on the path. Dalton stops short, but he doesn't look at the object. He's scanning the forest. I give the object one quick glance, and then pull my gaze away after I'm sure it's not a person. As I survey the forest, though, I recall the image. A bloodied heap. Something brown. What was Val wearing? It's too small to be her body. Too small to be her entire body. I don't pursue that thought. I know why Dalton is ignoring the heap. He can't be distracted from a potential trap. But the unknown pounds at my head, my mouth going dry, and all I can think about is Val agreeing to be our spy with Brady, and me letting her, despite Dalton's reservations. So I look. I suck in breath. Dalton tenses, shoulder blades snapping together under his t-shirt. "It's not Val," I say quickly. His gaze drops then, and he lets out a quiet oath. "It is a dog. No, it's a puppy." On the path lies what looks like a shepherd puppy, with brown speckles on its muzzle. As soon as I see those, I remember the wolf dog, the nursing mother. The cub is dead, slaughtered and left on the path. I pull my gaze from the cub and wrap both hands around my gun. Dalton steps over the tiny corpse. I lift my foot to follow. Then I stop. Eyes on my surroundings, I crouch and lay my fingertips against the side of the cub's neck. Still warm. I hurry to catch up with Dalton, continuing around the curve, and he stops and lets out a string of curses under his breath. There is another heap on the path. We don't stop for a better look. I see blood and entrails, and my stomach churns. I've seen plenty of dead animals up here, often in worse shape, half devoured and rotting, but this is not a predator's kill. These cubs have been planted, a trap that Dalton and I are expected to fall for because we have a dog of our own. So we will see these poor dead cubs and stop, and then a whimper sounds in the bushes, and Dalton lets out another curse, this one softer, almost an exhalation. Fuck no. What will be worse than seeing dead wolf dog cubs in the path? Seeing one that is not yet dead. Chapter 24. We take a step. Then the sound comes again. That deep-throated whine from the brush beside the path. Dalton glances back at me. It's the briefest of glances, no more than a flicker of eye contact. We should keep going. We're suckers if we don't, playing right into the trap Brady has set. A third cub has been left alive, horribly injured, as the cruelest of taunts. Punishment for the fact that we are not monsters. Can you walk by this dying dog? You know you should. It's a wild thing, a feral beast. But I saw how you left the wolf dog alone. I heard you say that she must have pups nearby. Heard the relief in your voices when she didn't attack. An excuse to let her live. Suckers. I'll leave Val by that spot where the sheriff got shot. You know the one. Just go there and you'll find her. The cub whines again. Fuck. Val? I call. Then louder. Valerie? She doesn't respond, and I know she won't. She isn't here. It would make no sense to kill these cubs and leave her with them, where she can warn us of a trap. Brady is out there, in the forest, with my gun. He's watching us, figuring out how to put us both down before we can fire back. And this is the way to do it. Get us to lower our guard as we go after the wounded cub, because we will do that. Of course we will. Suckers. I remember reading folklore that said one way to escape a vampire was to throw rice on the path, and it will be compelled to stop and pick up every grain before continuing on. I remember shaking my head at the absolute ridiculousness of it. But that is what Brady has done. He has thrown rice in our path, knowing we must stop to gather it up. Sam? I shout. Nikki? Here, Nicole calls back. Stay where you are and stay alert. Brady set a trap. There's no sign of Val. We're fine. Just hold there while we look for her. Got it. I cover Dalton as he takes another step. Then he bends to grab a stick with his bad hand, his knife still clenched in the good one. He pokes the stick around the brush where the noises come from. He jabs the cub by accident, and it lets out a startled yelp. Then it growls, and when he withdraws the stick, a pair of tiny jaws come with it, clamped on the wood before they fall away.
Well, that's a good sign,
he murmurs. Confident he's not about to step into a literal trap, Dalton walks to the undergrowth, bends, and pushes Franz aside. Inside is a cub. I catch one glimpse of it before I remember what I'm supposed to be doing. Don't be any more of a sucker than you need to, Casey. I stay back and let Dalton handle it. The cub whines and whimpers, and then... Fuck! I look over sharply. He's pulling back his hand, puncture wounds below his thumb welling with blood. It attacked you?
Nah, just snapped at me. It's caught in something.
How badly is it injured?
I see blood where it's caught, but otherwise nothing. Looks like a snare wire. I'm probably going to get nipped again, so ignore the cursing.
Got it. I survey the forest. I know this is a trap. It must be. But there's no sign of anyone. Dalton works on the cub, swearing as he's nipped. Then there's a sound from the forest. Herrick?
I hear it.
He backs away from the cub, who begins whining and yelping in earnest. However much freeing it hurt the cub, it's even more worried about being abandoned again, and it's making enough noise that I can't hear what's happening in the forest. Dalton retreats to me, knife still in his hand.
Sound came from that way.
Could you tell what it was?
Footsteps, maybe? Hard to say.
The brush crackles, loud enough for us to catch it between the cub's cries. I see it, too. A wave of movement. Branches pushed aside. Something big crashing toward the path. I aim my gun. There's another movement. A dark shape below where I'm aiming. The mother wolf dog staggers onto the path. Her gray fur is matted with blood, and she moves with a stiff-legged gait, breath coming so hard I can hear it. Dalton says,
"Fuck no."
And that seems odd. Yes, it's a tragedy that the wolf dog has also been mortally wounded, drawn back by the cries of her cub. But there's a note of fear in his voice that I do not understand until I see what hangs from her jaws. Saliva. Bloody, foaming saliva. Rabies? I whisper.
I hope not, but presume yes. We're gonna have to take her down. You got a bead on her?
I nod.
Okay. Take the...
The wolf dog charges. 1 second, she's shambling along, seeming a heartbeat from keeling over. The next, she is in flight, jaws snapping, bloody froth flying. I fire. The bullet hits her, and she doesn't care. I fire again, and Dalton stays right there beside me, and I want to shout at him to move, get out of the way, dive for cover, run! But he just waits as I fire more rounds, and by then she's so close I can see the proverbial whites of her eyes as they roll. Herrick! I shout as I fire one last time. He pushes me to the side. It's not a shove, just a push, and I'm scrambling out of the way, and he's just moving aside, and... The wolf dog falls. Mid-flight, she collapses. This weird movement, almost like she's dancing as she folds in on herself. Then she drops. And when she hits the ground, those wild eyes are frozen open in death. A bullet hole between them.
Nice shot, he says.
Next time, can you not stay in the path of a charging wild animal?
I knew you'd get her.
Just humor me, okay? I walk over to see I did get her, with every bullet. 2 to the chest, both of which would have been fatal, but she'd been too far gone to care.
Got another one here where the blood's drying.
It's the spot I'd seen on her flank, matted with blood. Dalton pokes at it.
Bullets,
he says. He uses his knife to cut it out. I've stood in on countless autopsies without flinching, but I swear Dalton makes me look positively squeamish. There is a question to be answered here, and he digs that bullet free without a moment's hesitation. He holds the bullet up, his fingers red with blood.
9 mil?
He asks. Yes.
One of the perks of being on the Rockton police force is that we get to choose our own sidearms. Mine's a Sig Sauer P226. Dalton is a revolver guy, the product of growing up here and using older guns. He carries a .357 Smith & Wesson. Anders prefers a gun that might actually stand a chance of taking down a grizzly. A Ruger Alaskan .454, which requires more wrist strength than I currently possess. The bullet Dalton found fits my weapon, the one Brady took.
Yes, I say.
It is possible we've misread the scenario. Brady shot this dog, which appears to have rabies or some other infection that drove it mad. It might have killed its own cubs. That one? I nod toward the third. Could have gotten tangled in a settler snare. Then Brady comes along, finds the mad dog, and shoots. Even if it was a trap, it only seems to have been designed to slow us down. Because he's missed the chance to attack.
Or he was setting a trap. He killed the cubs, and the mother unexpectedly returned and attacked. He shoots her and takes off.
Possible. Right now, though, we have two problems, leading in polar opposite directions. Finding Val and getting that cub back to town. He frowns at me. No, I say. As much as I love dogs, I'm not equating that cub's life with Val's. But this is about yours. His frown deepens. I wave at the wolf dog. If she had rabies, there's a chance her cub is also infected. The cub that bit you. We need to quarantine it.
Yeah.
No curse for this one. He hasn't considered this possibility, but now that I raise it, he doesn't freak out.
Huh. You're right. I could have a terrible and deadly disease.
Casey? I jump at Nicole's voice. I'd forgotten we've had two militia around the corner. The only reason they haven't come running is that they know how much shit Paul is in for disobeying an order. So they stayed put. Our voices assuring them we aren't lying in agony, shot on the ground. I tell them to approach, and I warn about the cubs, but when they appear, both are obviously rattled. I'm standing point while Dalton continues freeing the cub. Nicole sees what he's doing and jogs over with,
"Here, let me..."
"No," I say. "The mother may have been rabid. Eric's already been bit."
"Rabid?"
I struggle to keep scanning the forest. Dalton may not be freaked out about the possibility, but I sure as hell am. I feel him glance at me.
"It's unlikely,"
he says, his voice softer than usual.
"Highly unlikely. There's never been a confirmed case in the Yukon. But yeah, I've seen reports of it. We'll quarantine the cub. For a sign of trouble, I'll get my ass south."
I don't answer. Just keep looking for trouble, hoping that if it exists, it's out there, not here in the form of a small and terrified cub.
"Casey?"
"Hmm?"
"There's never been an incident. Not one. The mother could have had a seizure. Could have been poisoned."
"I vote poisoning," Nicole says. "If that bastard did this, poison is your answer." Dalton continues.
"Even if, by some very slight chance, it was rabies, I'm not seeing any sign that this little guy was bit by his mother. His legs messed up from the wire, so yeah, we have to consider the possibility that wound hides a bite. But what are the chances that she's got rabies, in a territory that doesn't have it, and she bit him, on the leg, that he then got caught in a snare?"
"One in a million," Nicole says. "We'll still take this guy back to Rockton to be sure." He hefts the cub as he stands and holds it out. The wolf dog lies over his hands as if too exhausted to squirm.
"Male,"
he says.
"Probably more wolf than dog, which means it's not a pet. But yeah, we gotta take it back. Sam, give me your jacket. You and Nikki will run him to town. Casey and I need to search for Val."
Dalton puts the cub inside Sam's jacket and pulls up the sides.
"Carry it this way like a bundle. Keep it tightly closed and he won't escape. He can breathe. Don't let him try to tell you otherwise. He stays in there until you're back at Rockton. Then take him to Casey's house. The door is unlocked. Put the whole jacket inside the door like this,"
he demonstrates,
"and then give it a push and get that door closed before he escapes. Leave him be. His leg's bad, but it'll hold until we come back."
Sam takes the bundled cub.
"Nicole," Dalton says, "while he's doing that, tell Will to announce what's happened. Minimum details. Arrange search parties. Let's get them out before dark."
Chapter 25. We search for Val. Call for Val. There's no sign that either of them was here except for that bullet in the wolf dog, and even that's hardly ballistic proof. It just means someone shot her with a 9mm. I don't know what's going on here. I can speculate, but the whole thing is just fucked up. There's no other term for it. Too many puzzle pieces could fit the hole, and yet none are exactly right. Did Brady set all this up? That's the answer I both like and hate. My gut likes it for the lack of coincidence. My head hates it for the complexity of the plan. Also, do I like it a little too much because it proves Brady is a monster? which makes this easier. If it wasn't for Val, having Brady escape might be the best possible solution. Let him die out here, no longer a threat to Rockton. But if he is indeed innocent, then he is like any other resident, and we failed him. He ran because we failed. He took Val because we failed. We put his back to the wall, and he lashed out.
Do not test me. If you do, you'll see exactly how desperate I am. Please, just let me go.
Val is the priority here, but she's nowhere to be found. We return to the dead wolf dog, and I examine the site. I find traces of footprints, but the ground is hard enough that they're only smudges, too faint to even tell if they're ours. Hell, even a perfect print of Brady's sneakers could be from our first time here. When we're finished, I check Dalton's hand. The puncture wounds are red and inflamed.
"'Cause it's a bite,'
he says.
"'Trust me, I've had them. Gotta get it cleaned and then bandaged so it stays clean.'
I nod. "'I'm okay, Casey.' I nod again. He puts his fingers under my chin and tilts my face up and bends to kiss me. It's a very sweet kiss, and when it breaks, I say, "'You do realize that's an invitation for us to be attacked.'
I'm setting a trap.
I smile at that, and he kisses me again, and then feigns stretching a kink from his neck.
You gotta get taller, he says.
I'll work on that. I smile again, because I know he's trying to coax one from me. He rests his forearms on my shoulders.
This sucks.
I do laugh at that. He's right, though. It might not be the most erudite description of the situation, but it's completely apt. There is nothing we can do about this. Maybe not even anything we could have done to prevent this. It just sucks.
I should have gone looking for you during the fire,
he says.
Should have realized something was up. Fuck, I should have realized what was up. Obviously someone set that fire for a reason. We might have stopped him.
Or gotten Val killed. Gotten me killed. Forced Brady into a panic and sent him over the edge. In hindsight, I should have told you what I was doing, but I was playing a hunch, and my hunch was that someone was using the fire as a distraction to kill Brady. While I wasn't going to sit back and let that happen, it wouldn't be the biggest tragedy in the world. Even if he's innocent. That's a shitty thing to say, but he was a threat either way.
Impossible situation.
I nod. He looks out at the forest.
Still plenty of daylight left. You okay with walking another hour or so? Gives us a chance to get farther in while heading for a destination.
Jacob's camp? He nods. You're worried?
Nah. Brady's not going after anyone out here. I still want to warn Jacob, though. I also want to let him know what's going on. Get him to talk to Brent, maybe Ty. Set them looking for Val.
Good idea. Jacob's camp is empty. That's no cause for alarm. He's packed it up, which means he headed off on his hunting trip. I feared that after he didn't leave the note yesterday. I know Nicole will be hurt, and I hate seeing that. On our way back to town, we take a different route to widen the search. There's still no trace of Brady or Val. Tomorrow we'll visit Brent and swing by the cabin that Cipher used for the winter, see if he's still lurking about. Brent's easy to find, though, and he's a former bounty hunter, which makes him as good a tracker as Jacob. Back in Rockton, the first thing I do is treat Dalton's hand. He's right that it just looks like a bite, but that won't keep me from worrying. Anders has explained the situation to the residents. Oliver Brady used the fire as a distraction to escape. He took Val hostage, with a promise to leave her at a set location in an hour. If we hadn't agreed, he'd have killed her on the spot. Val was not at the promised location. We are currently searching for them. He doesn't mention that we suspect the fire was deliberately set. That implies an accomplice, and people might jump to the conclusion it's the guy we locked up. We won't do that to Kenny. After Roy's bullshit, we don't trust people not to take justice into their own hands. We passed a search party as we were coming in. Dalton told them to keep at it for another 2 hours and then switch off with a fresh group. We have the advantage of daylight at this time of year, and we can keep hunting until nearly midnight. Next stop is the wolfdog cub. When we enter my house, Dalton blocks the exit, expecting the cub to charge for freedom. He doesn't, because he's hiding behind the sofa. I pull him out. I'm dressed in long sleeves and gloves, but he doesn't try to bite, just shakes and whines. I've brought sedatives, and he yelps at the needle, but a few minutes later, he's limp in my arms. I work on his injured front leg. It's not as bad as I feared. It's just messy, flesh ripped as he'd struggled against the snare wire. I bandage the wound. Then Dalton covers the cloth in a goop we use with Storm when she insists on licking a cut or sting. Once I'm done, I lean back on my haunches. He looks more like a lion cub than a wolf or a dog, with thick, tawny fur, gray and dark brown striping, and an even thicker mane around his head. He has the same freckles as his mother, though. "Do you think the father was a dog?" I ask.
"Probably not. Take away the coloring and those freckles, and he's wolf."
"Which is a problem."
"Either way, it's a problem. I'd rather face a wolf, but dogs have the genes for domestication. Wolves don't."
He looks down at the cub and sighs. "We'll keep him until we know he isn't rabid," I say. "Then we can do whatever." He slants me a look.
"Do you really think either of us is going to be able to do whatever after we've nursed him back to health?"
I don't answer.
"Yeah."
He heaves to his feet.
"We'll wait and see. But if anyone comes looking to adopt a puppy, the answer is fuck no. This isn't a pet. We can't turn him out into the woods at this age, though. Can't raise him and then release him after he's lived with humans. That's just as cruel. Dangerous, too."
He runs a hand through his hair and sighs again. "We'll figure it out," I say. "You and I both understand this isn't a pet wolf. But it's not a rabid dog, either." I pause and look down at the sleeping cub. "Or so we hope."
"He's not. Just gotta wait to be sure, and then we'll figure shit out."
Figure shit out. That's what we're doing on so many levels over the next 12 hours. There's still enough light for us to get to Brent's that evening, but Dalton doesn't want to leave town. We'll go at first light. Dalton joins the last evening search. That's where he's best right now, as our top tracker. He takes Storm. We're hoping to make a search and rescue dog out of her. That's what the breed is used for, though more commonly water-based, given their webbed feet and double coats. But her sense of smell is excellent, so that's our plan. She's only 8 months old, just entering doggy adolescence, with the attention span to match. This is the one area of her training where I've discovered I can't push. I've introduced her to the concept of tracking, and we work on it weekly, but it's mostly play at this point. I give her the scent of someone in town, and if she can find her target, she gets a treat. If the trail's too convoluted, though, she loses interest. Still, Dalton takes her, along with Brady's and Val's dirty clothing. Storm has spent enough time around Brady that we hope that helps. She's definitely better at finding residents she knows. She knows Val less well. Big dogs make Val nervous. But Storm only takes a quick sniff at Val's blouse, as if to say, "Okay, I know who you want," which is promising. They leave, and I stay behind to figure shit out. Some of that is investigating, some is talking to people, and some is just staring into space and thinking, and then jotting those thoughts into my notebook. Brady had an accomplice in town. That is a fact. There is absolutely no way someone coincidentally set fire to that shed when Brady was out of the cell. His accomplice put poison in his food, enough to make him violently ill. That gets Brady out of the cell and into the clinic, which was exactly the scenario I expected the moment I saw him throwing up. Not this old chestnut. Prisoner fakes illness to get to a less secure environment. Except he hadn't been faking. He'd gone the extra step and let himself be poisoned. From there, I'd supplied Brady with a hostage, a nurse at his bedside. Then his accomplice sets the fire and Brady grabs Val as insurance to get him out of town. Next, Brady knows the wolfdog is near that spot. He poisons her and kills her poor cubs to slow us down. It also gives him an excuse for Val not being there in case we catch up with him. He couldn't exactly leave her with a frothing canine, right? And the sniper? It could very well have been his accomplice, hoping to convince us Brady was in danger, or hoping to scatter us so he could rescue him. As a hypothesis, this solidifies Brady's guilt. He is a monster, a killer. But it's only a hypothesis. The assassin might have come from his stepfather. That would give Brady reason to panic. Then Brady enlisted a local mercenary of his own with promises of a rich reward. Was Kenny that local mercenary? He is just about to leave, and he'll need money. Still, when I consider him as a suspect, I feel sick. I won't interview Kenny until both Dalton and Anders are back. The point is that Brady has a confederate in Rockton, and it doesn't matter right now if it's Kenny or... There's another possibility. One person that I know suspects Brady is innocent. The one who delivered that petition. Also, the one who came running to notify us of the fire. Jen. Too much to think about. It's a puzzle of configuration, and each piece in it has two sides. Guilt or innocence. And the meaning changes depending on which side I place up. If Brady is innocent, then X. If he is a monster, then why? Two ways of looking at everything, leading to two ways of investigating. Stop. Focus. Take it apart. Look at the trees, not the forest. That's what my first detective partner taught me. There are times when, yes, it's good to step back and see the whole. But there are also times in police work when you must focus on the minutiae, on the trees, on one puzzle piece. Figure out where that fits, and that'll help you find where another goes. Get a few of those done, and then step back, or you'll go crazy with possibilities. Each configuration sending the investigation spiraling in a new direction. Focus. Start with the fire. The problem with determining the cause of a fire? The evidence has gone up in smoke. Which is why there are trained experts for this. Experts who are not police detectives. But I am every investigator in Rockton, and this is one of the many areas I've been researching. I've always been a believer in lifelong learning. I took every course my department would send me on, learned every new technique, subscribed to every journal, attended every local conference on my own dime, even as my colleagues rolled their eyes and said, "We hire experts for that, Casey." True. I did not need to know anything about forensic anthropology, because I would never be the person analyzing buried remains. But I wanted to know. And now I am that person. Jack of all trades, feeling truly master of none. Arson investigation. I evaluate the scene. Document it. Process the evidence. This time, the building has been saved. There's damage, but it can be repaired. And it doesn't take much investigating to know it's arson. The smell of kerosene gives it away, as it did the last time. It's an arson easily set by anyone with any knowledge of wood and access to kerosene, which really doesn't narrow it down in Rockton. Dalton comes back ahead of the others. A dripping black rug trails behind him with a look that is unconvincingly contrite. "Got too close to the lake, didn't you?" I call as I walk toward them. Dalton only sighs. "We need to take her there more often," I say. "So the siren's call of water is a little more resistible."
"I'm not sure it ever will be. Been thinking of buying one of those pools."
"The plastic kitty ones? She's a little big for that." I gingerly pat her wet head and she slumps happily.
"I mean the ones you set up,"
he says.
"The bigger pools."
"Then we'll have to keep the humans out of it."
"If they want to swim in dog fur, they can go ahead. Just make a rule. You use it, you clean it."
He walks over. I take his hand to examine it, but he wraps his fingers around mine, holding tight. His expression is calm, as if he's just returned from a walk in the woods, but his tight grip tells me the rest.
"Not a trace,"
he says.
"Storm did well. She found the trail out of town and followed it along the path. They turned off before the spot with the wolf dog."
Turned off or doubled back?
That's the problem. The trail left the path, and Storm followed it a while, but the undergrowth thickened and hit a whole warren of rabbit holes. She went nuts and lost the trail. I couldn't get her to focus. So I took her backwards in hope she'd pick it up again.
And?
And I don't know. She kept finding the same endpoint. I moved higher up the path in case he rejoined it, and then we were too close to the dead dogs.
He looks down at her.
She smelled those, and she was upset. Really upset. She got away from me and kept nosing the first cub, and...
He exhales.
It wasn't good. I got her out of there. Which means I can't answer the question. All I know is they left the path at one point, and neither of us could figure out where they'd gone from there.
Chapter 26. It's time to notify the council. Except we can't. Without Val, we don't know how. We have a radio receiver, we understand the basics of how to use it, and Anders knows specifics. But we don't have a frequency. That's top secret, need to know only, and no one other than Val, apparently, needed to know. We move the radio to our house and wait for Phil to call in. That's all we can do. We're up at 4. I play double nursemaid, first tending to Dalton's arm and his hand. The former is healing well. The latter shows no sign of infection. Then, while he cooks breakfast, I go see the cub. Storm comes with me. I'm not about to let her into the house. I'm still worried about rabies. But she smells them from outside and seems to think it's another dead wolf dog. Her whines escalate to howls. So I lift the cub up to the front window, and then she goes nuts, because there's another canine in town and I'm keeping him from her. I try to calm her by cracking open the front door just enough for her to snuffle him. The poor cub sees this massive black nose and he freaks. I shut the door and Storm starts howling again. The cub stops quaking in mortal terror and begins howling back. It's an interesting way to start my morning. I don't think my neighbors agree. The cub is otherwise fine. I'd left a bed and food and water. I have to clean up piddle and poop, but I'm not taking him out for a walk until that leg is better. I moved all my blankets and cushions and rugs upstairs, so the damage is minimal. I tend to his leg, replace the food and water, and then I return home for my own breakfast. At dawn, we're off to visit Brent. It's a long hike to the mountain where Brent has his cave. Before we leave, we remind Storm of Brady and Val's scents, and every time the path branches off, we have her sniff. She finds nothing. As we draw near the mountain, though, she starts getting excited. Which would be exciting, if we weren't on the path Brent uses daily. Storm is very fond of Brent, who always has dried bones for her. When we reach the cave entrance, she plunks down with a sigh. She still fits, but she won't for much longer. Once we get through, we shove a rock into the opening. The last thing we need is her wedging in and getting stuck. She sighs again and then sticks her head into the remaining opening to watch us mournfully. Or that's what she usually does. This time when she sticks her head through, her nostrils flare and she sniffs wildly as she whines. "Storm, no," I say. "Brent will come out. He'll bring your bone." She keeps whining, but I've told her to stay and she obeys. We're going down the first passage when my light catches something on the wall. Dalton is ahead of me, and as I stop for a closer look, he glances back. I have the penlight between my teeth so I can crawl. Now I take it out and shine it on the wall to see a handprint. A red handprint. "Eric."
"He's been hunting," Dalton says. "Must have butchered up top. That's what Storm smells."
He says that, but he still moves faster. And I remember Storm whining on the path, getting excited. Presumably, she smelled Brent. And if it wasn't Brent? What if, instead, she picked up the very scents we asked her to find? As we crawl, I tell myself I'm overreacting. Brady doesn't know anything about Brent. He has no reason to come for him. no idea where to find him. The chances that Brady would just happen to take shelter in the same cave where Brent lives? Infinitesimal. The opening isn't even visible from down the mountainside. We reach the cavern that Brent calls home. There's blood on the floor, large drops, some smeared. A shelf has been pulled down, contents spilled, another bloody handprint on the wall.
Brent!
Dalton's voice echoing through the cavern.
Brent!
I'm following the blood. More smears here, like drag marks. They lead to the smaller cavern Brent uses for storage. I pull back the hide curtain, and there is Brent, lying on the floor, curled in fetal position, blood soaking his shirt, one hand pressed against it. His eyes are closed. I bend to clear the low ceiling, then I crouch beside him. My fingers go to his neck, and he stirs. Dalton's figure fills the entrance. He's alive, I say. Barely. Brent's eyelids flutter, but he can't open them. His face is almost as white as his hair. He isn't breathing hard enough for me to even see his chest rise. Then there's the blood. A pool of it under him, his shirt soaked with it. We get him out of that small cavern. That wakes him, crying in pain. Dalton wets a cloth as I gingerly peel up Brent's shirt. I take the cloth and clean as carefully as I can. Brent whimpers, his eyes still shut, and Dalton tries to rouse him. There's a bullet hole through Brent's stomach.
Diagnosis. Dead?
A papery voice whispers. I turn. His eyes are barely open, but he's trying to smile.
I know the diagnosis, he says. Dead from the moment the bullet hit. Body just hasn't realized it yet.
He's right. If he'd been steps from a hospital when he'd been shot, he might have survived. Even that is unlikely. And now... Tears well. I blink them back hard.
Casey, Brent says. I already know.
I can try. He reaches for my hand and squeezes it.
Let's not waste my time. Not much left.
You want a drink?
Dalton asks. Brent manages a hoarse laugh.
I would love a drink.
Dalton takes a bottle from the backpack we brought. A gift for Brent, in return for his bounty hunting services. Brent cranes his neck up.
Is that...
Scotch. I'm told it's the good stuff. Bought it a while back, in case you ever had anything better to trade than skinny-ass bucks. Never did. But I guess you can have it now.
Brent laughs, knowing full well that Dalton would have bought this on his last trip. After Brent and I argued over the merits of scotch versus tequila, Dalton pours him a glass full.
Trying to get me drunk?
Brent says.
Yeah, hoping those conspiracy theories of yours might make more sense if you're loaded.
He hands him the glass.
Got any theories on who did that to you?
It's the bastard you were keeping in that town of yours. Kid told me you think he's... some kind of killer. Insisted he's not.
Brent looks down at his gut.
Seems he lied.
Okay, I say. Just rest and...
I'm not resting, Casey. I'm helping you catch my killer. And drinking. Heavily. If it starts spilling out my guts, don't tell me.
He takes a deep drink.
I was down the mountain, shooting grouse at twilight. Kid got the jump on me. The fuck?
He stops, apologizes to me for swearing, as always.
He got me dead to rights. I was picking up my game and put my gun down. He wanted to know where to find Jacob.
Jacob?
Dalton tenses.
Relax, Eric. You think I told him?
Brent slurps more scotch.
Said he wanted to hire Jacob as a guide. Get him out of here.
I said I could do it. He said no. Had to be Jacob. That's when I knew something was up.
He didn't just want a guide, I say.
Right. So I confronted him, and he told me that story about being a prisoner in your town, falsely accused. Says he needs Jacob as a guide and as insurance, but he won't hurt him. Offers to pay me to take him to Jacob. I say no. He threatens to shoot me in the shoulder. I go for the gun. We fight. I get gut shot instead. Maybe that was an accident. But the best... The jerk put his fist on my gut and pushed down. Made me howl. I'm ashamed to say. But I got the gun away from him. Fired a shot. When he took off. I hauled ass back here. Lost the damn gun on the way. Pardon my French. But I made it. Holed up with my rifle. In case he came back. He didn't. Nah. Ran and kept running. Little Pratt.
Was there anyone with him? Any sign of a hostage? Brent shakes his head.
He was alone. Never mentioned anyone else. It was all about him. How everyone done him wrong.
Brent coughs and then gasps in pain with a movement.
Damn country song he was. You don't need to worry about Jacob, though. I don't even know where he's camping right now. Left his last spot a couple of days back. So he's gone duck hunting,
Dalton says.
Not yet. Came by to say he was holding off. He was tracking a bull caribou and wanted to get that first. And he was trying to decide if he should ask that girl from your town to go duck hunting. Came to me for advice.
Brent gives a weak laugh.
Like I'd be any help. I faked it, though. Told him yes, he should do it.
So he's mobile right now? Brent nods.
Until he gets that caribou.
I help him lift the glass to his lips. His hand is trembling. He takes two big gulps. When he speaks again, his words are slurring, exhaustion and alcohol mixed.
Eric? Right here, Brent. You gotta bury me in my jersey, okay? The Maple Leafs one?
Brent raises his middle finger. Then he drinks more scotch with my help.
You know how I want to go, right? I do. Up in one of those platforms, like the Indians used to do it. I know. I'll do it just like you want it.
Brent's eyelids flutter. Then they open.
Almost forgot. Eric, you gotta get something for me.
His words are slurring badly now, and it takes a while for Dalton to interpret his directions and bring what he wants. It's two carved wooden figurines.
Give it to me,
Brent says.
You don't do it wrong.
He takes the figures and arranges them on his palm. It's a woman in a ponytail kneeling in front of a rolling ball of fur.
That a bear cub?
Dalton says. Brent raises his middle finger again. It's me and Storm, I say. When she was a puppy.
First time you brought her here, I remember you two playing in the grass. Been a long time since I heard a girl laugh like that. Now I wanted to capture it. She's not so little anymore. Yeah, Casey, gotta watch what you're eating.
We both raise our fingers for that. Then Brent hands me the figures. Up close, I see the detail, the hours spent carving them. I thank him, and we talk for a little more. He's flagging, and I tell him we'll build that platform and put him in his beloved Canadiens hockey jersey. And I say we'll get Brady for him.
I'm sure you will,
he says.
I'm not too worried about that. I'm just glad you came. Not a bad way to go. Good scotch. Pretty girl.
I squeeze his hand and bend to kiss his weathered cheek as his eyes close.
Eric,
he whispers, voice barely audible. Dalton bends by Brent's head.
I figured it out,
Brent says.
The secret, mind that town of yours. This is what it's for, isn't it? Harboring the worst criminals, the ones the government wants to make disappear. Save folks the expense of a trial and hide them up here, let their sorry asses rot.
His eyes half open.
I'm right, aren't I? Took you long enough.
Brent smiles, and his eyes close again. A few more breaths, and then he goes still. Chapter 27 I make Brent comfortable. I know exactly how ridiculous this is, but I do it anyway, arranging his body on his sleeping mat and pulling up a blanket, as if tucking him in for the night. Dalton doesn't say a word. Then I stand and march to the exit. I'm going to find Brady. I'm going to find him and put a bullet through his gut and leave him out there. Let him drag his ass to shelter so he doesn't get eaten by a pack of damn wolves. I will watch him drag his ass, and I will pray that the wolves come. Wolves, or a wolverine, or ravens. I hope it's ravens. I hope they find him, gut shot, and they rip out his... I don't go further. Dalton knows what I mean, and he doesn't need to hear the details. I stoop for the passageway, and Dalton grips my arm.
Casey,
I'm going to find him.
You will, but Brady's not waiting outside this cave.
I wheel on him. You think I don't know that?
It's been 12 hours.
I need to process the scene.
12 hours.
The crime scene isn't going anywhere. That's what he means. He glances back at Brent's body. No, I say. We're not doing that right now. We need tools.
He has everything.
Later. He's fine. He'll be... fine. He'll be fine. Brent is not fine. Brent is dead. And I don't want to lay him to rest because it feels like acknowledgement. Feels like acceptance. Feels, too, like I'm stalling when I need to be acting. We need to... I stop myself. Find Jacob. Warn Jacob. That's what I want to say. And that's where I must draw the line. I can't remind Dalton his brother is in danger, as if he doesn't know that, as if he's not holding himself back from running out to find him. It has been 12 hours. Another hour won't matter. Not for finding Jacob, not for examining the crime scene. For Brent, though.
We made a promise,
Dalton says, his voice low. I look over at Brent's body, and I burst into tears. And Dalton's arms go around me, holding me tight as I sob against him. We lay Brent's body to rest, the way he wanted it. On an open platform, with him wearing his Canadiens jersey, a reminder of the season he'd played for the team 50 years ago. Afterward, I examine the crime scene. That's what Dalton insists on for the next step. Jacob can wait. The crime scene could be disturbed. Storm easily tracks Brent back to where he'd been shot. Blood and trampled grasses mark the exact spot, as do the grouse Brent shot. There's a bow and arrows there, and I remember he was new to bow shooting, having finally agreed to let Jacob teach him.
Too old for this,
he'd said.
Learning new tricks at my age, but it saves on ammo.
Dalton said he could bring more ammunition with his trades, but Brent had blustered that he needed the other items more, which was a lie. He wanted to learn something new, wanted to challenge himself. Dalton takes the grouse. When we first met, I'd have been horrified by that. Stealing from the dead? Now I know better. It is a sign of respect. Brent killed these birds, and his effort should not go to waste, nor should the lives of those birds. We'll eat them, and we'll remember where they came from. Dalton takes the bows and arrows, too.
Jacob made these,
he says.
I'll give them back when we catch up to him.
Not when we find him. Certainly not if. There's very little chance Jacob is in any danger, and it really